Welcome back, Hemming Brainiacs, to the Hemming Brainiacathon. We're talking about chapter 30, part 2 of 3. Then we'll read the third of the chapter, which is actually the end of book 1. So we're going to be reaching the halfway point of the book. Very cool. Now, no discussions today, no discussion at all. The discussion prompt was Schemester Mode Engaged. It seems like Julian wasn't thinking with his head necessarily in this particular part of the book. In fact, what did it say? Something like he'd achieved what he'd been trying to achieve for 2 hours. So I think they slept together, but he goes ahead and says something like he's going away forever. Like a sense of urgency ploy. Here we go. Okay, let me have a look here. Part 1, chapter 30. This is the schmoop. I'll read. I'll read the summary. I'm just looking at the summary of chapter 30. And there's only 5 dot points, which is strange because it's such a long chapter. It's got like 16 or 17 pages or something. Anyway, Father Pirard travels to Paris to meet with the Marquise de la Mole. He asks Pirard if he'd consider leaving the priesthood to become his personal assistant. The salary is generous, but Pirard declines. He suggests Julian as an alternative, and the Marquise agrees. Julian gets the letter asking him to come to Paris immediately. He travels to the bishop's house to say he's leaving. He says goodbye to his friend Fouque, too. Before leaving, he rides back to Verrières and buys a ladder. He brings the ladder back to the de Renal house and uses it to sneak up into Madame de Renal's bedroom. She is shocked to see him, but also happy. The two of them spend the night together, and he waits a long time before leaving. All right, so I think when we left them, they were still together. There we go. Let's continue here and finish off part one, book one, I should say, of this chapter. So where did we leave off last night? After 3 hours of talking, Julian obtained what he desired so passionately for the first two. If it had come just a little earlier, frog in my throat. Exactly when I start reading. If it had come just a little earlier, this return to tender feelings, this eclipse of Madame de Renal's remorse, would have issued in divine happiness, brought about as it was by a manoeuvre. It was no more than a pleasure. Julian absolutely insisted, against his lover's wishes, on lighting the nightlight. "Do you wish," he asked her, "that I denied the memory of the sight of you? That the love that is surely in those charming eyes be lost to me, the whiteness of this pretty hand invisible. Remember, I have to part from you for what may be a long time." Madame de Renal had nothing to oppose in this argument. It made her melt in tears, but dawn had begun to sketch in the distinct outlines of the pine trees on the mountain east of Verrières. Instead of getting ready to depart, Julian, intoxicated with pleasure, suggested to Madame de Renal that he spend the whole day hidden in her room and not leave until the following night. "And why not?" she replied. "This fatal relapse robs me of all respect for myself and makes me wretched forever," and she pressed him to her breast. My husband is no longer the same. He has his suspicions. He thinks I manipulated him throughout his business, and he is behaving very resentfully towards me. If he hears the least noise, I'm lost. He'll throw me out like the miserable sinner I am." "Ah, there's one of Monsieur Chelan's phrases," said Julian. "You don't speak like that before my cruel departure for the seminary. You loved me then." Julian was rewarded for the self-possession that produced this remark. He saw his lover swiftly forget the risk that the presence of her husband made her run in thinking of the much greater risk of seeing him doubt her love. Day broke rapidly and flooded the room with light. Julian found all the voluptuous pleasures of satisfied pride once more. Now being able to see this charming woman in his arms and almost at his feet, the only one he had loved, and who a few hours previously had been completely dominated by the fear of a terrible god and devotion to her duty. Resolutions that had been fortified by a year of constancy had not been able to resist his valour. Soon a noise was heard within the house, something she had not thought of, struck Madame de Renal. That spiteful Eliza will be coming to the room. What shall we do with that enormous ladder? She asked her lover. Where to hide it? Suddenly she cried out with a kind of playfulness, I'll take it to the attic. But you have to go through the manservant's room, said Julian, astonished. I'll leave the ladder in the corridor, then I'll call the servant and send him on an errand. Think of something to say in case the servant passes the ladder in the corridor and notices it. Yes, my angel, said Madame de Renal, giving him a kiss, and you think of hiding quick under the bed if Eliza comes in while I'm away. Julian was astounded at this sudden gaiety. So, he thought, the approach of real danger, far from troubling her, gives her back her gaiety, because she has forgotten her remorse. What a truly superior woman. Ah, this is a heart in which it is glorious to reign. He was delighted. Madame de Renal took the ladder. It was obviously too heavy for her. Julian went to help her. He was admiring her elegant figure, far indeed from suggesting strength, when all at once, without help, she took up the ladder and lifted it as if it had been a chair. She carried it rapidly to the corridor of the third floor, where she rested it along the wall. She summoned the manservant, and to allow him time to dress, climbed up into the dovecot. On her return to the corridor, 5 minutes later, the ladder was nowhere to be seen. What had become of it? Julian had been away from the house this danger. If Julian had been away from the house, this danger would not have worried her at all, but at this moment, should her husband see the ladder, the situation was potentially disastrous. Madame de Renal ran about everywhere. At last, she discovered the ladder under the roof, where the servant had carried it, and at the same time concealed it. This circumstance was very strange, and at any other time would have alarmed her. But what does it matter, thought she? What does it matter what may happen in 24 hours, when Julian will have gone? Won't everything then be horror and shame for me? She had a vague idea that it was her duty to quit this life, but what did it matter? After a separation she had believed to be eternal. Excuse me. Eternal. She had believed to be eternal. What? He had returned. She had seen him again, and what he had endured to come to her showed so much love. In telling Julian about what had happened with the ladder, what should I say to my husband, she asked him, if the servant tells him that he found the ladder? She thought for a moment. It will take them 24 hours to discover the peasant who sold it to you, and throwing herself into Julian's arms, hugging him convulsively. Ah, to die like this, she cried, covering him with kisses. But you mustn't die of hunger, she added, laughing. Come, first of all, I'll hide you in Madame Derville's room, which is always kept locked. She stationed herself as a lookout at the end of the corridor, and Julian flitted by. Be sure not to open it if someone knocks, she adjured him, turning the key. In any case, it'll only be the children amusing themselves playing together. Make them come into the garden under the window, said Julian, so that I can have the pleasure of seeing them. Make them talk. Yes, yes, cried Madame de Renal, running out. Soon she returned with some oranges and biscuits and a bottle of Malaga wine. It had been impossible to steal any bread. What's your husband doing now? Asked Julian. He's writing out schedules for bargains with the peasants. But 8 o'clock had now struck, and the house had become full of bustle. If Madame de Renal was not visible, they would search for her everywhere. She had to leave him. Soon she came back, defying prudence, bringing him a cup of coffee. She was worried that he might die of hunger. After breakfast, she succeeded in bringing the children under the window of Madame Derville's room. He found them much grown, but they had acquired a common air, or maybe his perceptions had changed. Madame de Renal talked to them of Julian. The older one spoke warmly and with regret for their old tutor, but it seemed that the young ones had almost forgotten him. Madame de Renal did not go out that morning. He was ceaselessly up and downstairs in the house, busy making deals with some peasants to whom he was selling his crop of potatoes. Until lunchtime, Madame de Renal could not find a moment to devote to her prisoner. When lunch was announced and served, she had the idea of stealing a plate of hot soup for him. As she noiselessly approached the door of the room he occupied, carefully carrying the plate, she found herself face to face with the servant who had hidden the ladder that morning. At that moment he was advancing down the corridor, also noiselessly, as though listening. Probably Julian had carelessly been walking about. The servant made off, rather shamefaced. Madame de Renal entered Julian's room boldly. This encounter had made him anxious. "You're afraid," said she to him. "For myself, I can face any danger in the world without blinking. I fear only one thing, and that's the moment when I'll be alone after you've gone," and she ran out of the room. "Ah," said Julian, inspired, "remorse is the only threat that can daunt this sublime spirit." At last it was evening. Monsieur de Renal went to the casino. His wife, having announced the onset of a frightful migraine, retired to her own quarters, speedily sent Eliza away, and then got up quickly to open to Julian. He felt that he really was dying of hunger. Madame de Renal went down to the pantry to look for bread. Julian heard a loud cry. Madame de Renal returned and told him that, having gone into the pantry without a light, approaching a sideboard where the bread was piled up, and extending her hand, she had touched a woman's arm. It was Eliza who had let out the cry Julian had heard. What was she doing there? "Stealing a few sweets, or maybe spying on us," said Madame de Renal with a tone indifference, with total indifference. "But luckily I found a pâté and a large loaf." "What have you got there, then?" asked Julian, pointing to her apron pockets. Madame de Renal had forgotten that since lunchtime these had been full of bread. Julian clasped her in his arms with intense passion. Never had she seemed so beautiful to him. Even in Paris, he told himself confusedly, "I shall never meet a greater soul." She had all the awkwardness of a woman unused to attentions of this sort, and at the same time, the genuine courage of a person who fears only perils of a different order, perils terrible in quite other ways. Just as Julian was hungrily eating his supper and his lover teasing him on the simplicity of his meal, for she had a horror of speaking seriously, the door was all of a sudden rattled violently. It was Monsieur de Renal. "Excuse me. Why have you shut yourself in?" he cried. Julian had only just time to slide under the sofa. "What? You're fully dressed," said Monsieur de Renal, coming in. "You're eating supper and have locked the door." On an ordinary day, this questioning, phrased with characteristic conjugal abruptness, would have upset Madame de Renal, but she saw that her husband had only to lower his head a little to see Julian, for he had thrown himself into the chair opposite the sofa where Julian had been sitting only moments before. The migraine served as an excuse for everything. While her husband went on to recount at length the details of a pool he had won in the billiard room of the casino, a pool of 19 francs. "By God," he added, she caught sight of Julian's hat on a chair 3 paces in front of them. Her coolness became the greater. She started to undress herself, and at a certain moment, passing swiftly behind her husband, threw a dress over the chair with the hat. At last Monsieur de Renal went away. She asked Julian to continue with his account of his life at the seminary. "Yesterday I couldn't listen to you. All the time you were talking, I was preoccupied with how to brace myself to send you away." She was carelessness personified. They talked very loud, and it might have been 2 in the morning when they were interrupted by a violent knock on the door. It was Monsieur de Renal again. "Quickly, open to me. There are burglars in the house," said he. "St. John found the ladder this morning." "This is the end of it all," cried Madame de Renal, throwing herself into Julian's arms. "He's going to kill us both. He doesn't believe in any burglars. I'm going to die in your arms, far happier in my death than ever I was in life." She responded, not at all, to her husband, who was becoming furious, and hugged Julian passionately to her. "You must save Stanislas's mother," said he with a look of command. "I shall jump into the courtyard from the closest window and escape through the garden. The dogs will know me. As soon as you're able, bundle up my clothes and throw them into the garden. Meanwhile, let them break the door down. Above all, no confessions, I forbid it. It's much better that he has suspicions, not certainties. You'll kill yourself jumping, was her sole reply, and her sole concern. She went to the closest window with him. Then she had time to hide his clothes. At last she opened to her husband, who was boiling with rage. He looked round the room and round the closet without saying a word, then disappeared. Julian's clothes were thrown to him. He grabbed them and ran swiftly to the bottom of the garden on the banks of the Doubs. As he ran, he heard a bullet whistle past, and immediately the crack of a gun. That isn't Monsieur de Renal, he thought. He's too poor a shot for that. The dogs were running silently at his side, and a second shot must have shattered the leg of one of them, since he started to cry piteously. Julian leapt the wall of a terrace, made about 50 feet under cover, and started to fly in another direction. He heard voices shouting to each other, and distinctly saw the servant, who was his enemy, letting off a shot. A farmer arrived to fire from the other side of the garden as well, but by the time Julian had reached the Doubs, where he put on his clothes. An hour later he was a league from Verrières on the road to Geneva. If they're suspicious, thought Julian, it's on the Paris road they'll search for me. End of the first volume. End of the first volume. That's exciting stuff. All right. Fun times, fun times. Good chapter. All right. Good half a book, I suppose. I'm actually really into this book. It did lose me for a little bit there in the seminary, but that was quite exciting. What is my discussion from thoughts on part one? Question mark. End of part one. All right, have your say at the Hemingway List subreddit. Thanks for listening. I'll see you tomorrow.